With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Everything is Black and White podcast. It's time for the latest episode of Gibbo's Corner. I'm your host, Andrew Musgrove. And of course, I'm joined by John Gibson. And the subject of today's episode is Terry McDermott, a legend on and off the pitch for Newcastle United. We are recording this in the Lane Head pub. And if you hear some noise in the background, it's because the pub is getting ready to open. And yeah, you'll just have to put up with it, unfortunately. John, Terry McDermott, first of all, before we get into it, obviously, in recent weeks, it's horrible, isn't that he has been diagnosed with dementia at the age of just 69. Another professional player who's released that horrible news. What's your thoughts on that, first of all?
Well, it's tragic, as it would be tragic for anybody in any walk of life. It is a horrible, horrible thing. And, you know, so many of us look on these people as heroes, people like Terry McDermott, people like John Tudor, a different thing, Ray Kennedy, etc., etc. And it is an awful, awful, awful thing. I think the big thing from Terry's point of view is that he'll have huge love to keep him warm, because if anybody is loved by two clubs and not one club, then it's Terry McDermott, because he is quite unique. He's a Scouser, out and out Scouser, has been all his life, accent wise, love for the city, and he's adopted Geordie, and he loves Newcastle as much as he loves Liverpool, and he's managed to combine the two in the love that he will feel from both Liverpool and from Newcastle, from fans, will be absolutely enormous, and deservedly so, because, I mean, from our point of view, the guy has played twice for us. He's had two spells playing for us. He's been numerous times assistant manager, forever linked with Kevin Keegan. Keegan and McDermott is like fish and chips and Morecambe and Wise and Laurel and Hardy. They go together. And while he's a very loyal Scouser, he has continued to live on Tyneside and adores this club.
If you were going to want two sets of fans in your corner in this battle, it would be those from Liverpool and Newcastle. I'll read the statement out that he put together when he announced news, because I think it sums up Terry Mac really, really well. So I'll just read it out here. He says, "I've got to get on with it, and I will. It's the way I've been brought up. Nothing has come to me easily. I'm not frightened of taking it on. And also, as we've seen, there are a lot of former players in a worse state than me. Battling is second nature. The worst thing was, until my condition was diagnosed, you don't know what's going on. The number of ex-players being diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's is frightening." And just the words of saying, you know, battling is second nature, I've got to get on with it, just sums him up, because that's the kind of player he was. He was, you know, he was that midfield kind of player who did just that as well.
Yeah, he was. And he is that sort of person. Yeah. He comes from a working class background in Liverpool. He's proud of it. He had a battle to make something of himself. And he did that very successfully. And it is second nature to Terry Mac. And he knows he's got an awful lot of people in his corner. And he rose from being a Kirby boy and going to Bury, to going on and playing for Liverpool and winning just about everything that was possible to win, coming back and have a second stint here in the glorious days of Kevin Keegan, and then becoming Kevin Keegan's gopher or buffer when KK come back to manage us. So he's had a superb career, and we know, without being trite, that "You Never Walk Alone" is the wonderful, inspiring song of Liverpool. And it is true that with Liverpool supporters and with Newcastle supporters, joining together, and there's a lot of similarity between the two cities, I think, and the two sets of fans. He will not walk alone, that's for certain.
Yeah, we pass our best on to Terry. Let's go back right to the start then, when he first arrived at Newcastle, and he was just another brilliant signing from Joe Harvey. You just had a knack of picking these players out.
Yeah, he came from Bury, and this was Joe's major strength, was his man management and his ability to spot talent. Exactly the same two strengths as Kevin Keegan had much later as a manager. When you think of the sort of players Harvey plucked from other clubs and turned into stars, off the top of your head, you think of Supermac, who was at Luton Town, never played in the First Division in his life. Terry Hibbert, who was playing for Leeds Reserves when he signed for us. Tony Green came from Blackpool. Jinky Smith came from Aberdeen. Frank Clark come from Crook Town, where he just won the Amateur Cup. Tommy Craig come from Sheffield. Paddy Howard from Barnsley. And, of course, McDermott from Bury. This was the great strength of Joe Harvey. And he came for... in January 73, for only £25,000. The funny thing was, he went in to live with Alan Kennedy for what was supposed to be a few days when after signing for Newcastle, and he ended up staying there for 2 years. And, I mean, if you remember Terry, he was built like a toothpick. He was thin, wiry, typical box-to-box build, if you like. And on match days, which were inevitably sad days in those days, we didn't sort of do Sundays and staggered kickoffs. And on match days, he used to have Mrs. Kennedy made him a roast dinner, which he had at lunchtime before he went to the match and played in the afternoon. And perhaps a few players might want to do that now if it turns you into a Terry McDermott Champions League winner and England international.
Now, we've mentioned there he was a bit of a battler, but just going a bit more detail about the player he was.
Yeah, strong, not a fancy. He was more, I was going to say he's more of a Joe Willock, but actually that is the wrong way around. Joe Willock is more of a Terry McDermott, and Joe Willock will do very well to achieve anything like Terry McDermott achieved with the Champions League and with England. But he was, and Joe's built like him. He was slim, he was relentless. The loneliness of the long distance runner, that was Terry Mac. A terrific finisher. Not a fancy Dan ball player. He wasn't a Jinky Smith or a Terry Hibbert. He was the one that got up and support and finished.
Now, we know later on in his career, especially when he came to Newcastle as a coach, he had this kind of reputation as a bit of a joker, kind of the good cop to Keegan. Was he like that initially when he first arrived in Newcastle?
Absolutely. He was a typical Scouser. With all the jokes and the big Scouse accent and pulling tricks, and it was second nature to him. And I mean, the surprise, and we'll come to it later on, is that Keegan and him got so close, because they were in lots of ways very, very different people. Very, very different people. Because Keegan wasn't a Scouser. He didn't have that accent. He wasn't playing tricks. He was much more serious natured. He was very, very different to Terry Mac. But that's when you're a manager and you appoint assistant, you don't want the assistant to be a replica of you. You've already got you. You want the assistant to do what you don't do.
To compliment you.
Correct. Not to be and that was a mistake many managers made. Bill McGarry made it at Newcastle. He got Morris to be his number two, who was a total replica of himself. Well, why do you want a replica of yourself? You're the original. Get somebody this different. And Terry Mac was terrific for a dressing room. He was great for a dressing room as a player, and he was great for a dressing room as an assistant manager. And he brought all that to Newcastle United, and of course was, on his first spell here, was part of the team that got to the 1974 FA Cup final.
Yeah, he wasn't around very long, was he, at Newcastle? Obviously, he got that final, and Liverpool were the opponents, and Liverpool absolutely thumped Newcastle, and then off to Anfield he went.
Yeah, because he was our man of the match at Wembley. I know that's not saying much because we didn't achieve much, but he was one of the few pluses on the day at that final. And the funny thing is, you know, that his transfer to Liverpool, which was such a success for him personally, was actually, the foundations for it were laid in my office in the old Chronicle building down on the big market, which is rather a surprise. And that came about because after training each day, the players would be finished by about lunchtime. He would come down to my office. I would meet him outside the office and we'd go the pub just 50 yards down the road. We would go down there, downstairs in the basement and have a game of snooker. And after the game of snooker, we'd come back. He'd come into the office with me, go upstairs. I would lock us in an office where there was no one else around that could hear. And he phoned Phil Thompson, who, very, very famous, great player for Liverpool and become an assistant manager at Liverpool. Phil was from Kirby, exactly as Terry Mack was, and they were very close. And he would phone Phil Thompson, tell him the latest state of play that he knew that was happening from the Newcastle side. Phil would fill him in with what was happening from the Liverpool side. And the deal eventually got done. Now, that put me on the inside of the deal, so we weren't going to get scooped out of our eyes because we were on the inside of it. And you know what? I didn't begrudge him that move one iota. He wasn't the Geordie that was turning his back on the club to go to another club. For goodness sake, he was born in Liverpool and Liverpool wanted him. And if it was natural for Alan Shearer to want to come home to Newcastle instead of going to Manchester United from Blackburn, it was natural that Terry Mack should go to Liverpool.
So in those moments when he's making the phone calls in your office, just describe the kind of the mood of Terry. Was he excited? Was he apprehensive? What was it like?
He was a Scouser. I mean, you can imagine, the two of them, they spent half the time. I mean, the phone call went on for eternity. It must have cost the Chronicle a few quid, but the story got it back with the circulation. But, I mean, they would joke on for an age and then get down to the business in the middle, which was, hey, what's the latest situation? Has Joe said anything to you at this end? What is happening with the boss down there, et cetera, et cetera? Stick in, you'll get it, et cetera. And then back onto the jokes. But yes, he was excited. He was going home, and he was going home to a side that had the potential to become one of the greatest club sides in the world. And they did become one of the greatest club sides. If you look at his record, he played 322 games for Liverpool, scoring 75 goals. They won four championships, he did, four championships, three European Cups, two League Cups. He was the Football Writers Player of the Year in 1980 and the PFA Player of the Year in 1980. So I suggest that transfer turned out to be a success, both for Terry McDermott and for Liverpool. And, of course, he did come back to us, so it wasn't the end of our relationship with him. But he was going to be destined for bigger things than we were going to be destined for. And you don't begrudge somebody for wanting to go home. Anybody shouldn't have begrudged Alan Shearer for wanting to come home.
What was Joe Harvey's take on it, or was he just didn't want, he was never going to stand in his way?
No, he wasn't, because he knew that he couldn't. And like I've just talked there, he knew that his heart was in Liverpool.
Yeah.
He had a love of Newcastle, but the depth of his love for Newcastle came during his repeated returns, when he returned as a player and then he returned as an assistant to KK and had a long run here. This is when his deep love of Newcastle was formed. Joe Harvey knew that he couldn't stand in his way. What Joe Harvey did well is that he got him out of Bury and made him a player good enough for Liverpool to want him. So Joe Harvey did a terrific job there.
Did you see that move happening? I mean, when he arrived from Bury, did you know of him? Had you seen him? Did you think he's destined for great things? Or was it, did it come after a few months of watching him in the black and white? Because he did form a massive part of that Liverpool side. And I'm just wondering how quickly yourself, how quickly Joe saw that actually happening.
It did form. You saw rough edges when he come from Bury. There was absolutely no question about that. But you knew there was a diamond underneath. It was just whether it would be polished or not. And what he had was this unique ability. We were used to wonderful midfielders, but they were always clever on the ball. They were always Terry Hibbett. They were Tommy Craig. They were Jinky. They were Tony Green. They were clever midfielders. This guy wasn't clever. He didn't want to flick the ball up his trouser leg and do a circle and nutmeg people. He wanted to go box to box, box to box, box to box. But you could see and say, ooh, if this guy goes into a top, top side with top, top players around him, and bear in mind he had Souness around him and he had Hansen behind him. I mean, Hansen, for a centre-half, could play like a midfielder. His ability on the ball. And you had Souness, wonderful. You have Keegan to start with, then you have Dalglish after Keegan. I mean, goodness gracious,
it's not
me.
A bad
if
list,
can,
is it?
If you can play, you're going to blossom in that sort of environment. And blossom he did, of course.
Yeah, so he had a very good career at Liverpool. John's there, has mentioned the honours list. He returns to Newcastle, I think about 1982, and he helps Newcastle win promotion. He's in the side with Keegan. Just explain a bit about how that move came around.
Yeah, he came back 31, and he came back... We were in the depths of the doldrums when he came back. We were in the second division. We were going nowhere fast. The crowds were poor. We needed inspiration. We had Arthur Cox in charge. And all of a sudden, the whole thing's transformed. Keegan arrives. One of the all-time great signings for Newcastle United, without a shadow of doubt, along with Shearer, etc., etc. In this one, out of the blue, Shearer was coming home, you could understand. This guy was captain of England and playing for Southampton, who had finished second top in the Premier League. He's suddenly coming here to a side so far in the doldrums, but he was a Pied Piper. And all of a sudden, we've got Water, we've got McCreary, we've got Terry Mack. And we've got a front line of Keegan, Waddle and Beardsley with McDermott supporting from the middle of the park. And it was terrific. And, of course, McDermott had known Keegan from Liverpool, the first European Cup winning side. KK was in it before he went off to Hamburg. And they formed a terrific relationship. This is where the relationship really started, that flourished in the years when Keegan became manager. They were totally different. The only thing they had in common was a love of horse racing. That was the thing that bound Keegan and McDermott together from the start. The manager in those days was Arthur Cox, who had a close-cropped hair and full of military muscle. He was like an SAS man, and he worked the players like that. So Terry Mack and Keegan decided one of these days, right, okay, we're going to have a gentle mick taker about the boss. So they dressed in army fatigues and had little Tommy guns, artificial Tommy guns, and when they went to training that morning, they actually crawled through the undergrowth at Benwell, where the long grass was, and crawled out with the Tommy guns because they were trained by the SAS, like the SAS by Arthur Cox. And of course, they brought the house down with the players. Coxey saw the fun of it. He also knew it was his best two players, so you better keep them warm. And it broke the ground, and they were full of that. And it was mainly inspired by Terry Mack, who was a slapstick comedian, if you like. I mean, I always remember another day, he's got to get up with something. He drives in to St. James's Park before training, because I often met down there as well as up at Benwell. He drove into St. James's Park in the car this morning with a full Arabs outfit on, the complete kit and caboodle, the whole lot. the robes, etc., etc. He went in the club office, went up to the chairman's suite, knocked on the door. Stan Seymour Jr. was the chairman then, the son of old Stan that had done so much in the 50s with Newcastle. Knocked on the door. When the shout come in, he had his head bowed in, you know, his head covered, and he sat in the chair and said that he'd come to make a bid for Kevin Keegan, that he was involved with a football club that would like to sign Kevin Keegan. And for a split second, Stan Seymour actually thought it was true and panicked like billio, because Keegan was part of the whole rise and rise of Newcastle United from the doldrums to getting back in the first division was built around KK. And that was typical Terry Mack. And when Terry Mack told me about it, remembering that we'd done his transfer to Liverpool from my office, when he told me about it, I said, hey, that's a belter. That's great. I said, hey, look, yeah, you've got an outfit at home. He says, aye, I've got an outfit at home. Look like an Arab. Like, I said, would you put it on, like, so we can have a photograph to go with the story? This is what he did, want to sign KK. Sure. So he put the whole kit and caboodle on again, and we got a photograph of him sitting in the chairman's office at Newcastle United with his Arab's uniform on. That was typical Terry Mack.
On the pitch, like you say, he came back, he was 31. He could still cut it?
Oh, yes. I mean, like a lot, you can say that the best years were at Liverpool. And I think that's unquestionably true. You can argue that the best years of Beardsley were at Liverpool, although I would also argue that the part of the sandwich, the two Newcastle bits with Beardsley, were pretty damn good as well. But he won everything at Liverpool. This fella did. But it was interesting. For all his game was built on stamina more than pace. He had an uncanny knack of knowing when to make the runs. He wasn't slow, but he wasn't blisteringly fast, but he knew when to make
calculated.
Them.
Calculated.
Yeah, he was clever. He knew when to make them, and he continued to do that. It was obvious that he wasn't the man that won the European Cup three times and got X number of England caps, but he was still very, very effective, and this was Newcastle operating in the second division, as you know. And I mean, the whole thing almost went belly up at the end of that promotion, because we won promotion on that forward line of Keegan, Waddle and Beardsley. But when we went up, all of a sudden, everything disintegrated before we actually kicked the ball in the first division. Arthur Cox believed Newcastle weren't ambitious enough to survive in the top flight comfortably, and he went off to Derby County. Kevin Keegan had already announced before the promotion season was completed that he was going to retire because he'd seen that his legs weren't what they were when we played Liverpool in the Cup, and he had 10 yards start on Lawrenson, who then beat him to the ball. And he said, I'm not going to play in the top level. I want to be remembered for, and he retired. So you had no more KK, you had no more Arthur Cox. Jack Charlton come in as manager. Jack Charlton, as forthright as it's possible to be. Terry Mack, lovely guy, but nobody's fool and will not tolerate certain things. They never got on. Terry Mack was never going to play for Jack Charlton. Didn't play for Jack Charlton, so he left without kicking a ball. The interesting thing with Terry Mack is one of my great mates was Tommy Casty. They played for Newcastle in the 70s Cup finals and played in the same side as Terry Mack at Newcastle that went to the FA Cup in 74. And Tommy Casty become my manager at Gateshead after he'd had a spell in Cyprus as a manager, Tommy Casty. And he was in Nicosia managing the local club. And he signed Terry Mack for his club. And I remember Cass telling me much later, when Terry Mack first arrived on the island, he struggled because the quality of the players around him weren't anything like Liverpool and weren't anything like that Newcastle side that won promotion. Mm. And he struggled because he wasn't about a Dickie Dancer about his, he was a box-to-box relying on getting the ball released. But he came good. In fact, Cass said that a couple of directors were looking at Tommy and saying, who have you got here? You know, why did he bring this guy? And also questioning whether Cass should stay at the club. It worked out brilliantly at the end. They won the championship, 1986, got to the FA Cup final, got into Europe. George Best went and played for them for a couple of games. Can you imagine that, having a team in Cyprus with George Best and Terry Mack in it? Was a good drinking team, mind, as well as a pretty decent on the pitch. But yes, he went out and saw his days out there. And then came home, and to all intents and purposes, as far as Terry Mack was concerned, that was him finished with football, because he never saw himself as anything on the coaching side or a manager. He never saw himself as a manager, never saw himself as a coach.
But of course he did return. He returned with Newcastle as a coach, February 92, Newcastle in a right mess. How? Because you've just said there, he never saw himself in that position. We know Keegan was over in Spain playing golf, and Keegan was probably in the same boat as well. He never imagined himself becoming a manager. So
it was quite staggering. I mean, at the time, Terry Mack was forging a life after football. He had an outside catering business, which meant he went and worked air shows and the Grand National at Aintree when that was on, selling beef burgers to the punters. A little bit more than that, but there we go. And that was how he saw life. And, I mean, Terry Mack told me the story many times. He said that how everything came about. He used to work out at Anfield a few days a week just to keep himself ticking over fitness-wise, not to get flabby, not to get fat. And this day he was working out at Anfield on the weights, etc., etc., and he got a phone call from Little D, which is David McCreary, who had played at Newcastle with him. And McCreary was living up here, as he did. And he phoned to say, hey, you'll never believe it, our mate, Kevin Keegan, has got the Newcastle United manager's job. He couldn't believe it. He never thought, because he'd been out in Spain 6-8 years, playing golf, was completely out of the loop here, didn't know any players, hadn't been watching football. He didn't, I mean, Terry Mack said to me, I didn't think he would put up with a day-to-day chore of having to do everything that a manager does. Because as a player, he just turned up, trained very, very hard and had the ability to play. All of a sudden, he was responsible for everything and he didn't. He put on the teletext because he couldn't believe it, to make certain it was true, and it was true. And he said, he sent him a telegram. There's a sign of the times. He sent him a telegram saying, hey, congratulations, little fella. Pleased for you. And he said, never thought any more about it, apart from, isn't that a shock, like, that KK is up at Newcastle? I've mentioned that famously Terry Mack was a guy for the racehorses. So he phoned Newcastle United ground a couple of days later to speak to McQuinn, who a Scouser, who loved horse racing. McQuinn, by the way, thought that when Kevin Keegan come, he thought he was well in. A Scouser had loved horse racing, the manager's a Scouser that loves horse racing. But while that put Terry Mack and Keegan together, it didn't put Keegan and Quinny together. It did the exact opposite, actually, and he got Quinny out. But anyway, when he phoned Quinny at St James's Park, Derek Wright answered the phone, who was the number one physio at the time. Derek is still at the club now, as you know. Derek Wright answered the phone, and before he handed it over to Quinny, he said, hey, Kevin wants to have a word with you. Not now. He'll be giving you a bell. And Terry Mack said, great, that's no problem. Yeah. And a couple of days later, Terry Mack did phone him and said to him, will you come up and help me? And Terry Mack was like, eh? What? You want me to come up and help? Of course I'll come up and help. But, you know, what is he going to do? And I talked to KK about it later, and he said, the reason was, first and foremost, you need somebody you can trust when you're first in the manager. And Kevin Keegan was huge on trust. He believed in it so, so much. Mind you, the first time you cross him is also the last time you cross him, because there's no coming back. And Terry Mack has said that to me many, many times. He said he's the loyalest, most honest bloke I have ever known, bar none. But never cross him, because if you cross him, you're dead. And he said, I needed somebody that was loyal. And he was the one that famously called him his buffer or his gopher, because he knew he wasn't a super-duper coach, but then KK wasn't a coach. But he knew that he'd be loyal, he would cover Kevin's back, and he would be terrific in the dressing room for the players. And that is what he did. He was the guy that the players... You sometimes don't want to go to the manager, you know, because it makes it a big, big thing if you've got a little problem. But if you go to a confidant that has also got the ear of the manager and talk to him, problems can be solved. And that was what Terry Mack did, and was great. And the meeting that KK had with Newcastle United in London when he got the manager's job, he said at that time, John Hall had just taken over the club but was not in full control, so he couldn't do everything that he wanted to do, and the club financially was in some trouble. And so KK, who had hired the room for the Newcastle United meeting himself out his own pocket, said to John Hall at the meeting, I want to bring Terry McDermott up. And that got the raised eyebrow, it even got a raised eyebrow of Terry Mack. And he said to John, I'll pay for him out of my own pocket. That's the sort of relationship I have. I'll pay his wages out of my own pocket. He was due, Terry Mack, to only come up here for 3 months, which was to see Newcastle, if you remember, from avoiding relegation to the old third division. So he was going to stay for 3 months to help KK do that, and that's the way he came up here. And, of course, he stayed for life after that. And, I mean, it was laughingly suggested with Terry Mack. They say, what was his job exactly when he came to Newcastle under Keegan? His job was to go for the racing post, to get the lunchtime sonnies, and to put out the cones on the training pitch. That was funny, and that appealed to Terry Mack's sense of humour, because he had a real cutting-edge sense of humour. But it was a great disservice to what he contributed. Yes, he wasn't one of these great intellectual coaches that would come up with new tactics or whatever, but he was absolutely invaluable to Kevin Keegan within the dressing room, and therefore he's got to get credit for what happened with KK.
I mean, them first few months in the job weren't easy. I mean, Newcastle very nearly went down. Oh. And I always remember Keegan saying it would have been unfair on him, it would have been unfair on Terry to take these players down because they weren't his players, so to speak. How important was Terry in those months leading up to the eventual survival?
I think the first thing that Kevin Keegan saw, bearing in mind that long-term he'd have to put the team right, short-term, he's got to get results. And the best way of getting results is bonding together, where we are against the world, the siege mentality, and we will survive. And Terry Mack's perfect for that. He's perfect for that. And what KK knew is that you can get some assistant managers that'll just denigrate the manager a bit in a conversation with a player behind the manager's back. Oh, I don't worry, son. The manager's got it wrong, but we'll get it. None of that was involved with Terry Mack. He was as loyal to KK as KK was to him. And, of course, the point that we've also not mentioned yet in what Terry Mack gave to Newcastle United was that whenever Kevin Keegan walked out, and he did it so often it was untrue. In fact, he had to have a revolving door in the manager's office so that he could leave anytime he felt like it. Because he left regularly, it was his first manager's job. I think, in fairness to KK, who was very strong-willed and hot-headed on occasions, he didn't realise the diplomacy and the give and take and the cleverness at this stage that as a manager you had to have. So that if he didn't like something, he took to his toes. Some of it become, and I was right in at Newcastle at the time because I'd been part of the Magpie group that had helped get John Holland to power. So I was sitting on the inside of everything that was happening at Newcastle United. And two or three times, Kevin took to his toes and it never come out publicly. On a few occasions it did, and on the first occasion it did, if you remember, it's not what it said in the brochure, the famous quote which has lasted to these days. And that was because at that time, John Hall didn't have full control of Newcastle United. He was getting there, he was in the boardroom, but not full control, and therefore he could not automatically do what he did when he had full control, which is go out and sign everybody right up to a world record fee for Shearer. So it wasn't what he'd been promised. And really, it was Terry Mack that went and solved the position. Again, I spoke at length with Terry Mack about that day, and he explained there was infighting in the boardroom at Newcastle, and that KK felt he was piggy in the middle. They were living at that time in the Gosford Park Hotel, as KK had done when he signed for Newcastle as a player. And on the Friday afternoon, they were playing Swindon on the Saturday, and KK had been met with a stubbornness to his plans that he wanted to implement pretty quickly. And he suddenly announced to Terry Mack, that's it, we are checking out and we're heading south. And, you know, sort of Terry Mack was, eh? What's going on? He said, we've had enough, we've got it. And Terry Mack said to me, the idea behind it was that we had to get away out of Newcastle's, out of St James's Park and out of Newcastle to be able to talk everything through without the pressure of sitting on the volcano. So the first decided they would go to the Lake District to have this private talk. They got as far as Haydon Bridge on the way west to go to the Lake District, and Terry Mack was chipping away at KK in the car all the time, and KK accepted this would be unfair on the players and on the fans. Never mind what is happening with the board. There's a game tomorrow. If all of a sudden the manager and the assistant manager aren't taking that game, that is unfair on the fans and the players. So they decided, KK agreed, that they wouldn't renege on the game the next day. So what do we do now? We don't want to go to the Lake District. We're far too far away. So they turned the car around and went to Ramside Hall, which is just by Durham City in Sunderland. And they stayed overnight in the Ramside Hall, talked all the way through dinner, talked in the room afterwards, got up, had breakfast in the morning in the Ramside, and suddenly decided, both jumped in the car and went to St James's Park at 11 o'clock in the morning. The players had absolutely no idea what had been going on before the game. Newcastle went out and won the game, as this tended to do under KK. But Terry Mack said to me, hey, Gibbo, he said, before the referee had got in the referee's room and taken off his gear and had a shower, KK, at the end of the game, never went in the dressing room to speak to the players. He went out to his car and he was gone. And Terry Mack stayed there to talk to the players, to eventually go out to the press and have to talk to the press. And the press are now thinking, there's something happening here. And it's interesting how it was handled, because Newcastle in the days under John Hall and Kevin Keegan were great at communication. If you remember when they sold Cole, K Keegan went out to face the players. And by the way, if you look at those pictures, the guy on Keegan's shoulder is Terry McDermott. John Hall went to the training ground and talked to fans that turned up, got off a train from London, went to the training ground. Hall actually went down to the press room. John Hall, can you imagine Mike Ashley doing this? Went down to the press room to say that Kevin Keegan had left the room, etc., etc., made a statement. And by now, the windows of the press room were open. We know the press room ever so well. And you could hear the fans being disenchanted outside because, of course, the word was going out on radio, etc., that KK had left the building, as they say, and the fans were getting upset. Hall made a statement. On the Friday, Freddie Fletch got in touch. Freddie Fletch is the Lee Charnley of those days. Got in touch with KK on the Sunday lunch in Hampshire, where he had his house, and said, look, I've got John Hall here. John Hall got on the phone to him and said, listen, there's only me and you can save Newcastle United. There's only me and you. And that struck a chord with Kevin Keegan. It's us two against the world. And it's the chairman saying that. And Hall told him that there would be a check, a personal check made out in Keegan's name for the Monday morning, and that money could be spent on getting a player. And on that proviso, Keegan just said, see you Monday. Put the phone down in his car. He was up there for Monday. There was the check waiting for him, and he bought Killer Kilcline, who he's always said was the start of the building of Newcastle, because they needed organisation at the back. I'm thinking I sound a bit like today. They needed organisation at the back. They needed a good centre-half, etc., etc. And he always says, and Killer had been skipper of the Coventry side that won the cup. He was very, very good. And off they went from there. But there was a lot of times when Terry Mack saved the whole situation.
So he was the kind of the calm head. Yeah. He was the sounding board for Keegan. And I guess that you say a lot of the work he did back then probably went unnoticed. And, you know, he wasn't one to shout from the rooftops about his role in it. He was just, he was there and just got on with it.
He was terrific for Keegan, and Keegan was terrific for him. He didn't want Keegan's limelight. He didn't want to say, oh, and by the way, I'm chipping in and I'm doing my little bit. He would never say this on the side. He was happy to leave Keegan up there in the spotlight, which Kevin loved, and Kevin did very, very well. And he was supportive and reliable behind him, but carried an awful lot of significance. And he was a good, you've got to bear in mind that having got Kilcline in, Newcastle started spectacularly to buy good quality players as the entertainers were built up. And in a lot of those signings, Terry Mack had a part to play, which was terrific. Philip Albert, for example, who came to Newcastle. Newcastle were taking part in a pre-season tournament, 1994 this is, in Glasgow. Terry Mack's up with KK, etc., etc. Terry Mack takes a phone call from an agent who says, I've got 5 days to sell Philip Albert, and I'm trying to do it to a top English club. He'd already been in touch, the agent, with Liverpool and with Blackburn Rovers, and was now in touch with Newcastle United. Terry Mack went straight to KK, and he had, because he had a feeling that KK liked Albert. KK had worked at the World Cup, which was America that summer. He'd worked for TV at the World Cup in America, and he'd seen Albert play for Belgium, and he'd mentioned him to Terry Mack, what a good player he was. And Terry Mack said, you know, the good thing with KK and the frightening thing with KK is that he makes up his mind so quickly that a player's for us or a player's not for us. And he said, here, we go and we get Philip Albert. He said, Terry Mack said, I went once with him to Scotland to scout a player. He said, and we're sitting in the stand and the players run out the tunnel for the start of the game. And Keegan says to Terry Mac, come on, son, war form is not for us. And Terry Mac said, women, he hasn't even kicked the ball yet. Yeah, the game hasn't started. He said, no. He said, the shape of the kid, the way he runs, the sluggishness of him, and he's just running out the tunnel, by the way, is not for Newcastle United. And they were gone, and that's how much he makes up his mind very, very quickly. And he did that with Philip Albert. He just said, Philip Albert's first. And within days, Philip Albert was a Newcastle United player.
Now, we all know what followed with Newcastle United, the entertainers, touching distance within the Premier League title. How good was Terry, do you think, to miss out on that Premier League title with Newcastle?
Oh, without a shadow of doubt, because he missed out to Manchester United, which is Liverpool's greatest blinking rival, so it was bad enough missing out, but to miss out to Alex Ferguson and Manchester United, having had a 12-point lead, was an absolute killer for them all, and I think that took... I never think that Keegan was the same man again at Newcastle. I think that was the day.
Do you think Terry then had to hold that together? I mean, we know Keegan obviously resigned the January after. So do you think in that time he could see what you could see? He could see that Keegan wasn't the same man. He was trying to hold it all together?
Yeah. I think he did. And of course he was trying. You've got to remember that Shearer at this time turned down Manchester United to come to Newcastle. You've got to remember that David Ginola was wanted by Barcelona, and you can see them fitting like a glove, the pair of them, Barcelona and David. And Keegan persuaded him to stay at Newcastle. Now, he brought in Shearer, and he persuaded Ginola to stay here, and then he took to his toes. It wasn't comfortable. And by the way, just the one thing I want to say on Ginola that's interesting and emphasises what Terry Mac brought to the table, when we actually signed Ginola, Kevin Keegan was in America. And Terry Mac was on a caravan site in Amble. He was on a caravan site in Amble when he got a call on his mobile, and it was the president of Paris Saint-Germain, and he negotiated with the president in the absence of Keegan, because the negotiations weren't done by the chairman or the chief executive. It was done by the manager in those days. So Terry Mac is in a caravan in Amble talking to the Paris Saint-Germain president, who has got a lady interpreter next to him. He's got the voice full so she can hear it, to help. Now, can you imagine the interpreter trying to get this Scouse accent of Terry Mac and do a financial deal for David Ginola? But you see, he wasn't just making up the numbers. You know, when he took part like that in bringing such a startling player as Ginola, it's special.
Thank you for tuning in to the Everything is Black and White podcast. We'll get back to the show in just a moment. We just urge you guys to please subscribe to the podcast through whichever platform you use. Totally free to do. Just means every time we upload a new episode to our channel, you'll get a notification saying we've done just that, and you can listen to it straight away. And if you get the chance to leave us a review as well, that would be much appreciated. That really does help us out. You can also follow Chronicle Live's Newcastle United channels over on social media. We're at Chronicle NUFC on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. And you can email us here at the show with your feedback, your comments, your questions, whatever. Just drop us a line at the eibwpodcast@reachplc.com. And you can also stay up to date with everything to do with the club by subscribing to our daily Newcastle United newsletter. That's also free. And you'll get a morning news roundup, an evening news roundup, and a breaking news alert as well. And that'll get emailed directly to your inbox. The link for that is in the show notes. Hit that, scroll down to sport-newcastleunited. Tick the box and you'll all be signed up. Once again, thank you for listening, and we'll now get back to the show. We speak to the likes of Les Fernand, Warren Barton. They always talk about trading up at Maiden Castle, and you've got the crowds. And there's one story that Barton in particular always tells about looking up at the burger van, and there's Kevin Keegan and Terry Mac with a burger, legs over the side of the burger van, telling them to get on with it, sprinting. I mean, he must have been... We know Keegan was in his element in that situation. Was Terry Mack as well, being that close to the punt now?
Totally. Loved that. And all Newcastle did under Keegan was what Liverpool did, which is play five-a-side. So Terry Mack and Keegan would play five-a-side.
I was going to say, yeah, did Terry Mack get involved? We know Keegan did.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Loved it. I mean, once a player, always a player. It's only age that tells you you're not a player anymore, but if you can get the excuse. And the other one was head tennis. They were always playing head tennis, a pair of them.
No.
You know, great, great partnership. And joy that has lasted to this day. They are still the closest of friends to this day. There's absolutely no question about that. Loyal as it's possible to be to each other. And that's terrific to see, because sometimes in football it gets a bit bitchy. But you know, I always used to have a bit fun with Terry Mack and say, listen, mate, if I come back in the next life, I want to be Terry McDermott, I used to say. And he said, why is that? I said, well, I'll tell you what, like, because after you finish playing, you tell me you never thought you'd be in football again. And I thoroughly understand that. And that's the way it is. Because we all accept you're not a manager. You're not a coach in the traditional sense of, say, Graham Jones or Berkey in the old days or whatever. You're not a coach. And neither was KK. But this is the career you had at Newcastle. You came up in 92 to 97 for Keegan and worked with Keegan in this great area era. When Keegan takes to his toes, who's the next Newcastle United manager? Kenny Dalglish, that just happened to play with you at Liverpool. So he was manager in 97 to 98 and you were his assistant. Now, there's a blip in the road here, because the next manager is Rod Hullett and then the next manager is Bobby Robson, neither of whom have any association with you, so you're not assistant manager. However, you're not daft, you don't go away to live in Liverpool just in case you might be needed at Newcastle again, so you're still in Davosol. And what happens when Bobby Robson goes? Graeme Souness is appointed, who just happened to play with Terry Mack at Liverpool. So Terry Mack's back in as assistant to Graham Souness, 2004 to 2006. Because he's done such a good job as the number two to Souness, when Glenn Roder comes in, he's getting stepped up, so he stays as Glenn Roder's assistant. When Sam Allardyce comes in, he stays as Sam Allardyce's assistant. Now, when Sam Allardyce is then peddled by Mike Ashley, who gets the job? Kevin Keegan, who he'd played with at Liverpool. It's gone the full circle, and he's been assistant manager to Kevin Keegan, Kenny Dalglish, Graeme Souness, and Kevin Keegan again. So, but what that does tell you is that the appointment of McDermott in the first place by Keegan wasn't so stupid, because people of the stature of Dalglish and Souness realised what he brought to the table and kept him there. And after, in September 2008, Keegan walked away in the very famous thing with Ashley that ended up in a legal wrangle, other people realised how important Terry Mack was. And in between the time when he was out the loop with Hullett and Robson, John Barnes, who just happened to play with him, by the way, at Liverpool, took him to Celtic as an assistant. And then Lee Clark, who played with him in Newcastle, had him as assistant at Huddersfield in Birmingham to Lee Clark. So the guy has obviously got an awful lot going for him. We can all smile, but you don't keep a job just because you go for the recent post. You keep a job because you're loyal and you have an input in the dressing room.
Just finally, the pub's just opened there, so we are going to wrap this one up. Just sum up, John, in a sentence or so, what Terry Mack means to Newcastle United.
Terry Mack is the total fabric of Newcastle United. Everything that's good about Newcastle United, he has been associated with. As a player, the first time round, he helped take us to the FA Cup final. As a player, the second time around, he took us to promotion with Keegan, Waddle and Beardsley. He come back as an assistant manager at the greatest, most entertaining time in Newcastle's modern history, which is the entertainers under Keegan. And he stayed in, and went to the cup final with Dalglish. And he remains on Tyneside with a great love of Newcastle United. He is an ambassador, official ambassador at Liverpool, and goes through for all their matches. But he also goes to the Newcastle United matches because he cares. The greatest two clubs in his life are Liverpool and Newcastle United. And think of those two fan bases. No wonder he feels a warmth. And I wish him everything he wishes himself and everything the Newcastle fans and the Liverpool fans wish him, because we owe him an awful lot. And sometimes it's forgotten what his contribution was to the club as an assistant manager. We've been blessed to have Terry McDermott from the day he walked in from Bury all the way through to now.